This is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Year in Review, 2016's Hottest Stories. And that's the headline on the front page. The series of articles actually begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the first headline, Southern Season falls back to single location after sale. And this is all under a 2016's Hottest Stories by Cameron Snipe section. The beginning of December 2016 brought news from Calvert Retail trying to calm angst and uncertainty among Triangle area shoppers. Southern Season, the 41-year-old Chapel Hill retailer known to many in the Triangle and beyond, isn't going anywhere. But what prompted this reassurance, and the reasons it was needed, made headlines throughout the year. Most of that news was on the negative side for the brand, its workers, and customers. Calvert Retail, the Delaware firm behind Kitchen & Company that purchased Southern Season out of bankruptcy in August for $3.5 million, is basically working from the 2003 version of Southern Season, the year it moved to its 59,000-square-foot space in Chapel Hill's University Place, its only location. The bankruptcy declared in June erased the expansion the retailer had built outside the Triangle in the form of two new large openings, one in 2012 in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, and in 2014 in Richmond, Virginia. Brian Falver, then the company's chief financial officer, said at the time, "What we found is that a large brick-and-mortar strategy has not been the best expansion strategy. Those stores were just too expensive to run," he said. More store closures followed, including locations in Raleigh and Asheville. Also off the table was Southern Season's lease on a $6.3 million distribution center in Mebane, to which the town pledged $90,000 in incentive money. In September, the town filed to recoup $18,000 of that money it had already paid. When Southern Season filed for bankruptcy, the largest in the 12 months prior period, it had $9.8 million in assets and $18.3 million in liabilities and was owned by TC Capital Fund, a joint venture between Carborough Capital Corporation and Tryon Capital Ventures, led by Southern Season's then-CEO, Clay Hamner. He resigned August 5 and was replaced by then-company president Dave Herman, who now heads the local operation for Calvert. The sale to Calvert Retail didn't include a lot of the store's assets, as well as a smattering of smaller format stores branded Taste of Southern Season. Calvert is only keeping the Chapel Hill store operating, meaning all other locations included in the sale have effectively closed. Calvert's CEO Eric Brinsfield said in December that any chance of the Southern Season brand being totally absorbed by the company's Kitchen & Company brand and name is zero. He even alluded to the fact that he's trying to expand the Chapel Hill name by adding Southern Season branded products to its Kitchen & Company stores. Advance Auto names new CEO, adds fresh spark for legacy brand. Tom Greco had a great job as chief executive officer of Frito-Lay America, a booming part of PepsiCo. But in March, he agreed to become CEO of Advance Auto Parts, a company effectively based in Raleigh that employs 1,300 people in Wake County. Advance Auto Parts has a proud history and acquired Raleigh's General Parts International and its CarQuest brand in 2014 in a $2 billion acquisition. But Greco stepped into a challenging situation. Advance Auto has lost market share to AutoZone and O'Reilly Automotive. He also inherited a staff that he said had declining morale and rising turnover. "I knew this was a turnaround situation. I'm not going to call it by any other name," he said. "Our competitors have done extremely well in terms of growth. You can see that on a piece of paper. We haven't been performing particularly well, relatively speaking, for several years. So it's not like we just got here." North Hills changes include more land, big plans for new tower. The sprawling North Hills development in Raleigh set the stage for even more growth in September when Kane Realty grabbed 34 acres along I-440 and St. Albans Drive. Then in December, Kane unveiled plans for a whopping 31-story tower along Six Forks Road that would be part of an ambitious mixed-use development. The 31-story tower would be in the same complex with a new 20-story tower, significantly changing the look of Raleigh's emerging midtown. IKEA confirms interest in Triangle. Will IKEA come to the Triangle? Maybe so, a spokesman for the popular home furnishing store confirmed. The market can support a store. And Cary Town Center is suggesting that it is on the brink of adding a very recognizable and in-demand retailer as part of its efforts to revamp the aging mall. Major projects rising in Durham Core. Downtown Durham is changing in a big way, and a major catalyst continues to be investment from Duke University. Duke is expected to be a key tenant and partner in three downtown projects: the Chesterfield on West Main Street that's opening in the spring, the 27-story One City Center Tower expected to deliver in early 2018, and the Durham.ID Southern Gateway buildings breaking ground in January. Duke Clinical Research, one of the largest academic research organizations in the world, will anchor all the office space in the new South Building in the rising Durham Innovation District. North side of Chapel Hill to change. Chapel Hill is changing, and rapidly. Now a new development is scheduled to rise on the north side of town at the intersection of Interstate 40 and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. A North Carolina real estate firm with projects across the triangle closed on 55 acres in Chapel Hill on Eubanks Road with plans for an ambitious mixed-use project. Northwood Raven's plans for the $80 million Caraway Village include retail, commercial, and multifamily space with a mix of low and mid-rise buildings. Duke adds hotel on campus. Duke University is adding a new boutique hotel as part of an expansion at the Fuqua School of Business. The $62 million J.B. Duke Hotel, named for the creator of the Duke Endowment, will be part of the ongoing expansion of the Thomas Executive Conference Center. The hotel will be on West Campus near Fuqua and will help Fuqua improve its offerings for visiting executives and training and education programs. The seven-story hotel will have 198 guest rooms and more than 20,000 square feet of meeting space. It is scheduled to open in January. Oh, and in case you are wondering, the hotel is booked for Thursday, February 9, the night UNC Chapel Hill plays at Duke in men's basketball. Google Fiber finally arrives in the Triangle. The Triangle's fiber story is beginning with the first signups held in September in Mooresville. The full rollout will take years, but the highly touted project finally made its Triangle debut. Google Fiber will continue to expand across the market, although the company has been secretive about its plans, and the rollout has caused some angst among local homeowners. Raleigh has issued at least 18 official notices of violation to Google Fiber contractors since work began, resulting in nearly $62,000 in fines and damages, ranging from sewage line issues to water main breaks. Coastal grows, makes name more prominent. The year 2016 was huge for Raleigh's Coastal Federal Credit Union, which is pushing for a higher profile and bigger market share in the competitive Triangle financial scene. Coastal has seen explosive growth under Chuck Purvis, who was named CEO in 2012. In April, Coastal secured the naming rights of what is now called the Coastal Credit Union Music Park at Walnut Creek, with a five-year deal for $1.8 million. Purvis was named Triangle Business Journal's 2016 Business Person of the Year. And finally, overtime law about to change, and then it doesn't. Employers were faced with major changes in the U.S. overtime laws, and then they weren't. Starting December 1, the rule was scheduled to more than double the salary threshold for workers to qualify as exempt from overtime pay requirements. The rule would raise that threshold from $455 to $913 per week, or from $23,660 to $47,476 per year. But right before implementation, a federal judge in Texas blocked the rule in a lawsuit involving 21 states. That left the law in doubt, with Donald Trump about to become president and business owners flocking to their attorneys for advice. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. California firm grabbing high-profile space. For a suburban office building, it'd be tough to beat the visibility with the new 4540 office complex on Slater Road in Morrisville will be getting when it opens in March on a hill next to the intersection of I-40 and I-540. That, coupled with the relative affordability of the new speculative office building, think $26.50 per foot versus $35 a foot in Raleigh's urban areas. And it was a matter of time before a tenant deal was signed. And sure enough, the developers of 4540 announced that a California medical device firm will take all of the second floor and part of the first at 4540 once the building is finished. Align Technology, the maker of the Invisalign teeth straightening device, had opened an office in Cary in 2015 for its new base of East Coast operations. With this new deal at 4540, Align will have enough space to expand and ramp up to more than 170 employees. NNO integrating Herald Sun after surprising purchase. The sale of the Herald Sun of Durham unfolded so quickly that Sarah Glines, still new to her job as publisher of the News and Observer, only learned of it about 3 weeks before it happened. The NNO, whose parent company is California-based McClatchy, announced the purchase from Kentucky-based Paxton Media Group on December 21. By December 26, the Herald Sun was part of the far-flung McClatchy Group. I think it presents a lot of opportunity for both operations, Glines says. It gives the NNO a foothold in Durham, which is a great thing. Glines, who will oversee both operations, is looking at how to integrate the two products, as well as their Chapel Hill editions, and quickly. There's nothing like a deadline to sharpen the mind, she says. Glines says a priority for the Herald Sun will be improving online and in social media. She says the NNO's online offerings are more advanced than those of the Herald Sun. The Herald Sun now has only 35 employees compared to 320 at the NNO. There will be a lot of digging in to see what everybody does, she says. In particular, she says she wants the Herald Sun to remain a voice for Durham, a community quite different from Raleigh. We want to be clear that we acquired the Herald Sun because of its deep connection to that community, she says. We want to maintain that connection and grow it. He loves to horse around on first night in Raleigh. For more than two decades, Fuquay Varina handyman, farmer, and entrepreneur John Smith treks to downtown Raleigh on the last day of the year, horses in tow. Smith, CEO of Golden Leaf Carriage, which will offer sleigh rides to New Year's revelers attending Raleigh's first night celebration Saturday, is a downtown tradition himself. I think I've done it every year but the first year, he says. For most of the year, his side business and passion is a horse-drawn carriage service, acting as a hearse for 96 funerals and as a romantic transportation alternative at about 20 weddings in 2016 alone. Tell Holiday Fat it's time to take a hike. The North Carolina State Park System is continuing its annual first day hikes on January 1 by ringing in the year with more than 40 guided hikes scheduled in the state park system. They range from short leg stretchers to 7-mile treks, and many of them feature interpretive programs by rangers along the way. All seasonal state park facilities will remain open on the holiday. On the first day of 2016, a record 3,469 hikers traveled 8,228 miles on state park trails, according to the North Carolina State Park System. And in North Carolina, it all started right here in the Triangle. The first day hike tradition in the state began at Durham's Eno River State Park more than 40 years ago. First Day Hikes is promoted by America's State Parks and the National Association of State Park Directors, with more than 400 hikes scheduled across the country. New Digs brings popcorn machine. The new year brings New Digs, popcorn maker and fitness center included, for Durham-based employees of Social and Scientific Systems. While the Silver Spring, Maryland-based company has had a Durham outpost since 2005, it recently moved into new space at 2505 Emperor Boulevard that is more conducive to future growth and collaboration between departments, says President and CEO Kevin Beverly. We're seeing some uptick in the pharmaceutical space that we like, and so we're excited about that, says Beverly of Future Growth in the Triangle. SSS is a research company focused on public health. The company also inked three new deals with its major client based in Durham, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, over the summer, Beverly says. SSS currently has about 130 employees based in Durham and 500 company-wide, says Beverly, noting headcount has increased roughly 5% over the last year. The company also has an office in Kampala, Uganda. Corporate functions for SSS are housed in Silver Spring, while Durham houses clinical and epidemiology groups, as well as survey operations and lab services. Best Buy launches outlet in Raleigh. Raleigh is adding an outlet store for Best Buy. Best Buy is opening 5 new outlet stores across the country and will turn a former Best Buy retail store on Capitol Boulevard into its newest outlet, about 2 miles from one of its regular stores. Most of the outlet stores will carry products that are already on clearance or from boxes that have already been opened, including TVs, appliances, and computers. Product assortment will change weekly, and all sales from the outlet stores are final. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages. And each one is for this edition is On the Beat, 2016's Hottest Stories. And first we'll start with the page by Amanda Hoyle. Revitalized Triangle Town Center hopes upgrades lure shoppers. After months of negotiations and financial setbacks, Triangle Town Center Mall was sold in February to a new ownership group promising a fresh vision and additional capital for long-delayed improvements to one of Raleigh's flagship retail properties. The deal, valued at $174 million, sold a 90% ownership stake in the mall to DRA Advisors LLC, a New York private equity firm that specializes in real estate assets. CBL and Associates Properties of Chattanooga, Tennessee, previously a 50% joint venture owner, retained a 10% ownership share in the property and continues to lease and manage the property. DRA Advisors also contributed $25 million of new equity in the modification of the Triangle Town Center loan to fund tenant improvements, leasing commissions, and capital expenditures, according to a report by Fitch Ratings. Since the property's sale, Triangle Town Center Marketing Director Jennifer Jones says the mall's management has made a number of new upgrades to the property, including upgrades to LED lighting throughout the mall interior, renovation of the mall's restrooms, upgrades to the entrances on upper-level Macy's and Dillard's Wing, refurbished and reconfigured soft seating areas, additional staffing hours for its operational crews, and additional marketing and advertising dollars. Jones says that talks are also underway to reposition the town common's outdoor shopping area of the mall as an entertainment district with a variety of retail and non-retail uses. We really are entering a new era at Triangle Town Center, Jones says. On December 28, DRA Advisors finalized a deal to sell off Triangle Town Place, a retail center across the street from the big mall property, for $30.25 million to an affiliate of Verite. The property is leased to 5 tenants, including Dick's Sporting Goods and Party City. Home prices in Triangle among fastest rising in America. Home prices in the Raleigh-Cary Metro over the past 10 years have jumped 19.5%, ranking the metro among the fastest-growing markets in the country, according to a study by American City Business Journals. The Durham-Chapel Hill Metro wasn't far behind Raleigh, with 18.8% increases in home prices over the past decade. But what's most impressive is that nearly all of that growth has happened within the past 18 months. Prices across the market in 2016 were fueled by a potent cocktail of high demand, low inventory, and historically low interest rates. In 2015, Triangle Multiple Listing Service data shows that the Triangle market closed out the year with 5% growth in the average sale price and a median sale price that increased by 7.3%. The first few months of the 2016 sales year looked to be headed toward an even bigger blockbuster year, but by mid-year, the markets had started to settle down. The market was tracking toward 5% growth for the year in average home price and a 5.5% growth year-to-date in median home price. Part of what has tempered further increases and growth is lack of supply. Demand for ready-to-move-in homes priced under $350,000 and often near $400,000 has grown to a point that it has outstripped supply in most every submarket in the Triangle. The inventory level for new and existing homes priced under $300,000 was for much of the year at a one-month supply level compared to a usual 4 to 6 month average. Housing construction starts in the Triangle hit a milestone in the first quarter, exceeding 10,000 annualized units for the first time since 2008. And home building companies are stockpiling prime land and lot positions in anticipation of a good 2 or 3 years of solid selling activity. Based on a review of Triangle Area real estate records by Metro Study, a housing market research firm. Wegmans, Publix, Lidl, and Sprouts announced plans to disrupt Triangle grocery market. In 2016, Walmart, Food Lion, and Harris Teeter were the top-ranking grocers in terms of market share in the Triangle region. But with more than 24 new grocery stores announced or confirmed throughout the market in 2016, the Triangle's grocery retail market will never be the same. It was a combination of companies new to North Carolina, like Wegmans Food Markets and Sprouts Farmers Market, and companies new to the U.S., such as Germany-based Lidl, that stake their claim to many of the region's remaining prime grocery locations. Retail real estate sources say there could even be as many as 42 new grocery store locations scoping out the region and in various stages of site location, planning, and construction. New York-based Wegmans, for example, confirmed in January that it will be expanding south into North Carolina with a new store in Cary. Then, throughout the course of the year, the company confirmed plans for 3 more locations in Raleigh, Cary, and Chapel Hill, each of which is large enough to carry inventory to fill a 120,000-square-foot store. Lidl, the European grocery chain, has been working on plans for 2 years to begin opening its first store in the U.S. by 2018, but it was through land purchased and plans filed in 2016 that the market got its first hint to the company's expansion plans. To date, Lidl has at least 12 grocery sites in the Triangle and Eastern North Carolina identified for new stores. Phoenix-based Sprouts also settled on its first deal in the region, breaking ground on a new store on Falls of Neuse Road in August. And Florida-based Publix continued its expansion by opening a second store in Cary in May and a third store at Heritage Wake Forest in September. Publix confirmed December 28 it will add a store in Durham. One reason is just the strength of our economy. The other is just chance and our position on the East Coast, where we happen to be, said Charlie Coyne, Director of Retail Services for the Triangle and Triad Markets at CBRE Raleigh. One grocery store that starts with a W is moving south, and one grocery store that starts with a P is moving north, and we're in the crosshairs right now. And now we turn to On the Beat, 2016's Hottest Stories by Lauren Onasorge. Rocky Mount lands massive CSX rail hub. It started with a celebration. CSX, the Jacksonville, Florida-based rail giant, would bring a massive $272 million intermodal rail hub to Johnston County. Officials called the project an inland port. It was hailed as a way for the state to transform into a major transportation hub, bringing in 1,500 jobs. But as officials from Governor Pat McCrory to county commissioners were lauding the deal, property owners along Selma's Baton Road were in shock. Jenny Edwards, a retired Johnston County Schools employee, says she was told she would have to vacate her property in 6 months. "Where would I go?" she said at the time. As economic developers were planning details, Baton Road planned a coup, printing yellow signs with the Save Our Farm slogan. writing officials and signing petitions. They made an impact, prompting both McCrory and commissioners to speak out against the deal in Johnston County. Tony Braswell, then chairman of the Johnston County Commission, said weeks after the announcement, "We can't support it like this. We want it and we need it, but we can't support it this way." CSX quietly started seeking an alternative site, and North Carolina economic developers panicked, seeing what they saw as a major opportunity slip through their fingers. As some in Johnston County were making Hail Mary offers to CSX, Four Oaks Mayor Linwood Parker even made an unsolicited site suggestion, prompting outcry from more landowners. Developers started scrambling. Norris Tolson, chief executive officer of Carolina's Gateway Partnership, is among those credited with salvaging the deal for North Carolina. He, along with his group, approached North Carolina Wesleyan College in Rocky Mount about a parcel across the road, and CGP secured landowner approval before the plan was finalized, an attempt to avoid the pushback experienced in Selma. After two visits to the site, CSX agreed to the proposal. The rest, economic developers hope, is history. Commerce Secretary John Scavarla, who was among those working behind the scenes to secure the project, says it will be unlike anything you've ever seen. "You will drive by 400 or 500 acres and you will not know it's there," he says, describing the site plan. "There will be brick pillars and wrought iron gates that will look like a college campus. Cranes will pick up mammoth cargo containers, switching them between trains and trucks. They will have overhead cranes that are 100 yards wide, the size of a football field," Scavarla says. "They'll be electric operated and you won't be able to hear them." While developers in Johnston County say they're disappointed, they're happy the project is in North Carolina. "It's still a win," says Chris Johnson, Economic Development Director for Johnston County. HB2 has impact on North Carolina, from business to sports to music. House Bill 2, a contentious measure adopted in a special session in March, dominated headlines across North Carolina in 2016. Critics, including executives at tech titans such as Red Hat and IBM, criticized the measure for not supporting an inclusive society. And some companies fought back with boycotts that are already costing the state. PayPal, for example, nixed its plans to bring 400 jobs to Charlotte, citing the measure. Companies aren't alone in reacting strongly to the bill, as a slew of events and performers also suspended plans to appear in the state. Both the ACC and NCAA pulled championship events from North Carolina in protest. The impact could only be the beginning, as the NCAA in April will announce future dates for championships through 2022. The bill and its impact frustrated economic development officials across the state, and the repercussions could be more than what has been reported. Companies look for reasons to scratch a candidate market off their list, especially a company that places a premium on intellectual capital, says John Boyd, principal at the Boyd Company, a location consultant. He says missed opportunities don't typically issue press releases, and the Raleigh area is ideal for firms seeking the intellectual capital provided by area universities and technology giants, he says. HB2 provides a reason to scratch North Carolina off the shortlist, and in doing so, companies can then market themselves as being a progressive company of the future, he adds. Proponents of the measure, known nationally as the Bathroom Bill, have said it keeps women and children safe in public locker rooms and restroom facilities. Following the NBA's decision to pull its All-Star game from Charlotte over the measure, Governor Pat McCrory called the reaction total PCBS. McCrory adamantly defended the measure through his re-election campaign, blaming out-of-state interest groups for what he saw as a negative spin on the bill. Attorney General Roy Cooper, who beat McCrory by the narrowest margin in North Carolina's gubernatorial history, opposes the measure. In March, he said he would refuse to defend the bill against a federal lawsuit, and at his victory rally after the election, he told the crowd he would finish the job and repeal HB 2. A special session of the General Assembly in December failed in an effort to repeal House Bill 2. Wind farm launches in eastern North Carolina. After more than a year of construction, Amazon's 104-turbine wind farm is set to be fully operational by the end of 2016. Stretching across Pasquotank and Perquamins counties, the $400 million Iberdrola project is the first of what proponents hope will be many wind projects in the state. But another proposed project hit a major snag in 2016. Don Gitchick, senior project developer at Apex Clean Energy, says the farm his firm wants to build, planned to be 105 turbines across Perquamins and Chowan counties, will move forward at a smaller scale for now. The project scored a conditional use permit in Chowan, but Perquamins commissioners rejected the application in November after resident outcry over aesthetics and property value concerns. Kysik says legal action is being filed to appeal Perquamins' decision, and the project will move forward in Chowan at just 48 turbines. And now we turn to On the Beat, 2016's Hottest Stories by Jennifer Henderson. The main headline, questions face Quintiles after merger. Quintiles IMS sees ways to reduce costs, but will that mean job cuts ahead for a major Triangle employer? For Quintiles, the year started with the surprising so-called merger of equals with IMS Health and ended with the retirement of former Chief Executive Officer Tom Pike. The year also ended with questions about what jobs would remain in the iconic Quintiles headquarters that looms over Interstate 40. Dennis Gillings started what grew into Quintiles Transnational Holdings Incorporated in a trailer on UNC Chapel Hill's campus. The contract research organization exploded into a multinational giant and helped make the region a hub for the pharmaceutical industry. But in May, IMS Health Holdings Incorporated scooped up Quintiles in a $9 billion deal. The deal, which closed October 3, saw IMS shareholders take 51.4% of the new Quintiles IMS Holdings Incorporated. It also saw a significant shift in leadership. Ari Boosbib, chairman and CEO of IMS Health, assumed those same roles at Quintiles IMS. Pike, CEO of Quintiles since 2012 after taking the reins from Gillings, transitioned into a new role as vice chairman and president of Research and Development Solutions. As for the remainder of Quintiles IMS's executive team, the majority is legacy IMS as the power shifted to Danbury, Connecticut. Most of the new corporate leaders from Quintiles have had relatively short tenures there. On November 2, Boosbib said the company had doubled its cost savings projections since the merger's announcement. I am pleased to announce we are doubling our cost synergy target, raising it from $100 million run rate annual savings to $200 million run rate annual savings exiting 2019, he said. Boosbib further said the savings will be derived from areas like duplicate infrastructure and back office functions rather than client-facing resources. In particular, he mentioned areas of overlap in information technology, human resources, and global delivery network. It's not yet clear how those increased savings may impact jobs in the Triangle. Jefferies analyst David Winley says, what is a benefit to employees in Durham is the fact that IMS and Quintiles are pretty different businesses. IMS is more a data business, sales and marketing, whereas Quintiles is more R&D focused, meaning you don't have as much redundant activity or staff. At the same time, he adds, when you're looking for $200 million in synergies, that means there are some redundancies that they expect to address or eliminate. Quintiles IMS then announced the retirement of Pike on November 30. In an SEC filing, the company said Pike was retiring as a member of the board immediately and that he would stay on as an officer and employee only until December 2. Quintiles IMS called the retirement a personal decision and was not due to any disagreement with the company on any matter relating to the company's operations, policies, or practices. Richard Staub III, president of legacy Quintiles company Novella Clinical, replaced Pike in the position. Staub also serves as the leader of Quintiles IMS's global functioning resourcing business and a member of the Research and Development Solutions Executive Committee. Quintiles IMS called Pike's retirement part of a planned succession. We are grateful to Tom Pike for his stewardship of Quintiles and commitment to getting this merger moving in the right direction, Boosbib said. I am really excited about our opportunity to lead the evolution of the CRO industry and am confident Richard and his world-class management team from R&D Solutions are poised to drive that change. What's next for the last remaining Fortune 500 company based in the Triangle remains to be seen. After contentious process, Spellings leads UNC system. Margaret Spellings promised the best is yet to come in October when she was inaugurated as president of the University of North Carolina system, a moment capping a tumultuous year of change for the state's university system. Spellings, the former U.S. Secretary of Education under President George W. Bush, took over on March 1 and was inaugurated on October 13. The position came open after the Republican-led Board of Governors shoved out Democrat Tom Ross and turned to Spellings, who had served as president of the George W. Bush Presidential Center in Dallas. Critics of the leadership shuffle argued that Spellings lacks the necessary academic experience for the role and that there was little transparency in the process. But supporters pointed to her efforts at the federal level, which included being instrumental to the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001. She also led what became called the Spellings Commission, a national effort to chart a new vision for higher education and one that connected schools and their programs with the changing economy. Her hirers and supporters have said Spellings will be effective in making sure students are prepared for employment. Spellings admitted she was surprised by the intensity of the critics. She began her tenure by visiting campuses across the state in an effort to engage faculty, staff, and students. Spellings received a 5-year contract with a starting salary of $775,000 per year, more than the $600,000 per year Ross earned. Ross, meanwhile, landed at Duke University when Duke announced he would join the Sanford School of Public Policy as a Terry Sanford Distinguished Fellow working on voting district and policy issues. Former Raleigh companies at heart of issues with New Jersey's Valeant. In 2015, Valeant Pharmaceuticals International Incorporated scooped up 2 Raleigh-based targets in billion-dollar deals. The year after was not smooth sailing. Valeant worked particularly hard to buy Salix for $11 billion. And in the Triangle, the sale resulted in the loss of Salix executives and hundreds of workers. For all the trouble, however, Salix's future under Valeant is anything but certain. In November, the Wall Street Journal reported Valeant might sell Salix to Takeda Pharmaceutical Company of Japan for $8.5 billion in cash and future royalty payments. The newspaper later reported those talks had fallen apart. Salix's sale would enable Valeant to pay off certain debts, Wall Street Journal noted. Earlier, Valeant paid $47 million to settle a U.S. Department of Justice investigation launched in 2013 into promotional practices for one-time Salix products. The company also said sales from Salix drug Zivaxan, spelled X-I-F-A-X-A-N, had been lower than expected. Valeant announced in early November that it posted a $1.22 billion loss in the third quarter. That loss, the company said, was largely linked to write-down of the value of Salix. Meanwhile, Valeant moved forward with its own plans for Salix, announcing a sales force expansion for legacy Salix drugs, Zaxafan and Relistor. Valeant also was plagued with trouble from its $1 billion deal for Raleigh-based Sprout Pharmaceuticals. In November, former Sprout shareholders filed a complaint in Delaware Chancery Court that alleged Valeant breached the terms of its merger agreement by failing to develop and commercialize Sprout's former star product, Adderall, a female libido drug. Valeant agreed to pay former Sprout shareholders $1 billion upfront plus 40% of the future global product margin for Adderall, according to the complaint. While original sales projections for Adderall from Valeant and Sprout topped $1 billion, the complaint stated that, based on publicly available information, Valeant sales of Adderall for 2016 are projected to be no more than $10 million and could be even less. Valiant's breach has not only damaged the former Sprout shareholders, but also deprived Valiant shareholders and debt holders of a significant source of revenue, and deprived millions of women of a first-in-class drug option to treat a prevalent and unmet medical need, said attorney Jonathan Schiller, who represents the former Sprout shareholders. The complaint pointed to a steep $800 price point, as well as Valiant seeking to sell ADE through Philidor, whose former CEO is under criminal investigation for fraud and conspiracy. The complaint alleged Valiant did not employ a 150-person sales staff and did not remove an alcohol co-use restriction for ADE. And now we turn to the A Better World page, written by Todd Cohen, who is also a publisher of Philanthropy North Carolina. First, we'll start with his column, which has the headline, Foundation Focuses on Orange County. The Interfaith Council for Social Service in Carrboro received $10,000 in support to support operations at its food pantry that provides 1,300 bags of groceries per month to people in need, and at its community kitchen in Chapel Hill that last year provided 60,000 meals to hungry individuals. Reach Out and Read Carolinas got $1,500 to support a regional literacy summit its Triangle office hosted for coordinators at health clinics who prescribe books for young children visiting the clinics and for representatives of partner agencies that donate the books. And the PTA Thrift Shop in Carrboro received $10,000 to assess the organizational needs of nonprofits that will be housed in YouthWorks on Main, a nonprofit collaborative the Thrift Shop is launching with Youth Forward for nonprofits serving youth. Making all those grants was Stroud Roses, believed to be the only charitable foundation that makes grants only to nonprofits serving Chapel Hill and Carrboro. With just more than $7 million in assets, the foundation has awarded more than $5.1 million in grants to 292 nonprofits since it was formed in 2001. This year, it awarded 62 grants totaling $286,000. We intentionally give to a lot of organizations and spread the money around, says Eileen Farrell, the foundation's part-time executive director. Stroud Roses was created through the will of Irene Stroud, the widow of Fletcher Eugene Stroud, who retired in 1979 as a partner in the former Johnson Stroud Ward furniture store on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. The foundation also received proceeds from the estate of Gladys Harrison Adams, Irene Stroud's sister, and from the sale of more than 250 acres in Chatham County, now home to the residential subdivision Stroud Mountain, where Jean Stroud grew up. The foundation pays about $38,000 a year to Witherspoon Rose Culture in Durham for upkeep of the Jean Stroud Community Rose Garden, a public space at 120 South Estes Drive on town property that can be reserved for free for events. Jean Stroud proposed the idea for a community rose garden in 1987 and helped design its layout. Grants to local groups range up to $10,000 and average about $7,000, with grants to support general welfare, education and literacy, and youth accounting for the biggest share of funding in 2016. Each year, Stroud Roses also gives $33,000 to the Chapel Hill Carrboro Public School Foundation, which uses the funds to support projects in the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools. We look at them as being the experts on what the greatest needs are and what the greatest impact can be, Farrell says. With 700 nonprofits in Orange County, including those in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, Farrell says she is working to encourage more local giving overall, including giving by living individuals who account for 71% of all charitable giving in the U.S. There's a lot of need that still exists, she says, that we alone can't address. And in nonprofit news, family, kids, and dogs get assistance. The Realtor Foundation of Wake County, which works to provide people with safe housing, will provide volunteer manpower and financial assistance to Families Together, the Green Chair Project, Wake County's Cool for Wake program, and Haven House Services Rent House in 2017. Gina Miller of RE/MAX United is serving as board president for the coming year. Heather Thompson recently joined the foundation as director of operations and development. Echelon Experiences gave $77,000 to Triangle nonprofits in 2016, the company said. The company's four core partners were the Tammy Lynn Center for Developmental Disabilities, Raleigh City Farm, Band Together, and the Hope for Haiti Foundation. The AKC Canine Health Foundation, a Raleigh nonprofit whose mission is to treat and cure disease in dogs, received a donation of $35,446 from Purina. The contribution was the result of 35,446 original posts shared by dog owners on social media in November about how they are thankful for their dogs as part of Purina's hashtag dog thanking campaign. For every post using the hashtag, #dogthanking, and tagging at Purina, Purina donated $1 to the AKC Canine Health Foundation. A local Walmart and Sam's Club campaign over 7 weeks collected more than $675,000 on behalf of Duke Children's Hospital. It was part of a national campaign for Children's Miracle Network Hospitals, which resulted in nearly $37 million for member hospitals across America. Donations poured in August 29 to October 16 as Walmart and Sam's Club associates at 115 locations held fundraising efforts. Patients at UNC Children's Hospital got a lift December 8 when executives from Greensboro-based Bell Partners, an apartment investment and management company, delivered 100 green boxes full of books, magazines, puzzles, stickers, and games. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal, and we start with the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Economic Board Changes Could Hurt North Carolina Recruiting. As we end the year by looking at the biggest stories of the year in this week's issue, I would be remiss if I didn't mention two recent developments that could have a profound impact on business recruiting in North Carolina. One, of course, is House Bill 2, and the fact that North Carolina legislators could not come to a consensus for a full repeal of the law. Much has been written by us and others on this issue, and I am sure there will be additional developments in the long session next year as Governor-elect Roy Cooper pushes to change the course of this discussion. The second development may have gone somewhat unnoticed, especially by the local business leaders trying to close the year by signing the last contract or making a last-ditch effort to close a merger. I'm talking about the makeup of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, the nonprofit business recruiting arm that replaced the work of the North Carolina Department of Commerce. This outfit was started soon after Governor Pat McCrory took office, and the end of the 17 board members, the legislature placed 8 members, and McCrory chose 9. One would think that since business recruiting is one of the benchmarks that determines a governor's competence, Cooper would be given the authority to implement new strategies to move the state forward. But that does not look like it will be possible. Quietly, the partnership board approved changes that now say board members cannot be removed except for malfeasance, misfeasance, or nonfeasance. Based on the expiration of the board terms, Cooper will be more than halfway through his term before he can really make a change to the board makeup. While it is understandable that a board should have continuity, this is not the way to do it. It was surprising that Christopher Chung, chief executive officer of EDPNC, went along with the plan when he knows he will need Cooper to close recruiting deals. Cooper already is talking about a lawsuit to undo this move. I am not sure that is helpful either. What needs to happen is for all the board members to get together with Cooper and come up with a plan of action. The HB2 fiasco already has poisoned the well this year. We do not need another self-inflicted wound that keeps us from bringing new high-paying jobs to our cities. And everyone needs to set aside their ideologies to make EDPNC work. North Carolinians deserve that. And in our People on the Move section, the spotlight is on Julie Batchelor, director at Seaspring. A civil engineer by trade, Julie Batchelor had has been able to parlay that knowledge into a broad-reaching career that has included serving in some very influential positions, including Deputy State Controller for North Carolina and Interim Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer for the North Carolina Community College System Office. Bachelor has now been named a director in the North Carolina outpost of Seaspring, an information technology consulting firm. She's responsible for strategic growth and project leadership for that office, located in Research Triangle Park. Indianapolis-based Seaspring was founded in 1996 and focuses on business enablement, data accessibility and analysis, and technology implementations. It delivers services to public and private sector clients. The North Carolina office was established in 2014. Seaspring currently employs about 74 people company-wide, 13 of whom are located in the Triangle. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? Seaspring's company culture. It is one of the key reasons I joined the company. The company president and owner, Cynthia Pizarro, is passionate about investing in the company's clients, employees, and the community. The C in Seaspring stands for committed, collaborative, consultative, and caring. These company values align with my personal values. At the end of the day, I want my work to make a difference and to help others be successful. What are some of your major goals in your new position? Seaspring has very talented people, and the company is passionate about making business leaders successful. I will be actively working to expand services provided to clients in the Triangle and surrounding areas. Biggest pet peeve? I don't like to be late. I always strive to be on time or ahead of schedule. Biggest worry? I very much want to make a difference, to add value. When I'm working on a project or pursuing a goal, I want to be able to look back and see that I've helped. Have the resources that were invested been well utilized? Are operations more efficient? Has there been an improvement in services? Are people better able to do their jobs? Is technology enabling the business? Have I helped someone achieve their goals? Family, Bachelor and her husband have two children, Alexi and Bruce. With our remaining minutes, we'll read more of 2016's hottest stories. RDU adds Paris flight hopes for China route in future. After months of rallying by both community and airport officials, Raleigh-Durham International Airport's direct flight to Paris officially took off in May. It was a $75 million gamble for Delta Airlines, with a 164-seat Boeing 757-200 jet making a daily trip from RDU to Paris. That's the same jet Delta uses for international flights from New York and Los Angeles. To entice the bet, RDU agreed to contribute $1.25 million in fee waivers and marketing dollars. Local businesses and communities from Quintiles and Red Hat to Durham and Wake counties combined to pledge an additional $1.1 million. The move is paying off for Delta. Victoria Forbes Roberts, Vice President of Pricing and Revenue Management at Delta, said recently that the flight was already performing better than expected. That's exactly what local officials have been wanting to hear. They're hoping to leverage the success of the Paris flight for yet another international connection. In a recent interview, RDU Airport Authority CEO Mike Languth points to both Duke University and Lenovo as motivators for a possible Chinese flight by 2019. But there are serious barriers getting in the way of additional international destinations. RDU has a 10,000-foot runway, and that a runway at least that long is considered essential for a Chinese flight. Languth has said repeatedly that the current 10,000-foot runway is nearing its end of life, making RDU's other big headline for 2016 its approval of the Vision 2040 site plan, crucial in attaining more international routes. The site plan, complete with a new runway that could reach 11,500 feet, was approved in October. But with an estimated 3 to 5 years of use left on the current runway, it's essential that the airport work quickly, Languth has said. Even though the plan has been approved, it takes months before his team can submit it to the Federal Aviation Administration, and it could take an additional 9 months before the FAA approves the plan. Following an approval, RDU will have to go through an environmental assessment process that could take another year. Languth says he's already been in discussions with the FAA to expedite the process. We are going to work as diligently as we can, he says. In the meantime, new flight announcements continue to pour in, making the new gates the Vision 2040 plan would use even more of a necessity. In 2017, Delta is bringing in flights to Austin and Seattle, and Allegiant is set to debut a flight to New Orleans. Leadership changes shake up Raleigh's Inc. research. For Inc. research, 2016 marked the second year out from the company's IPO. The year also gave way to a substantial jobs announcement and a series of leadership shakeups for the Raleigh-based contract research organization. On December 13, Inc. Research announced plans to add 550 jobs in North Carolina over several years and relocate its headquarters to Mooresville's Perimeter Park. The company continues to grow and have success, said Chief Administrative Officer, General Counsel, and Secretary Christopher Ganzel. The jobs we add to the Triangle region will support our clinical offerings, he said. The average salary of the new jobs will be $74,923, according to the company, which added that its expansion will be facilitated by a state job development investment grant, and that it will be eligible for $8.4 million in reimbursements over the next 8 years. Genzi said the move is slated for mid-2018 and followed an 18-month global search for a new headquarters. The company considered state incentive programs, airport access, and where its workforce could be combined under one roof. Inc. Research also saw a number of leadership shuffles throughout the year. In May, Inc. Research announced the retirement of Jim Ogle, former CEO who had been on the company's board since 2003 and risen to chairman. David Norton became board chairman. In July, CEO Jamie McDonald announced he was stepping down and being succeeded by Alistair McDonald, who was of no relation, on October 1. In October, the company appointed Michael Gilbertini, based in Austin, Texas, as its new chief operating officer. He succeeded Alistair McDonald in the role, while Tara Fitzgerald, executive vice president of biometrics, succeeded Gilbertini as president of clinical development services. And we'll stop there, as we run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. But be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.